Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives Podcast. I'm Adam Turtletail from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Laura Perkins. Laura is a partner at the law firm of Hughes Hubbard. Laura, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today.
Thanks for having me.
So the reason we're talking is I spotted your FCPA and anti-bribery fall 2018 alert, which gave quite a comprehensive review of all that had been going on in the previous year. Can you tell us what the biggest trends were in the anti-corruption world in 2018?
Sure. I think that the biggest trend really is the growth in international enforcement of anti-bribery laws, as well as international cooperation in that same space. I have been practicing in the anti-corruption area for over 10 years now. Prior to joining Hughes Hubbard a little over a year ago, I was with the Department of Justice in the FCPA unit, leaving as a supervisor of that unit for 10 years. And the amount of international cooperation over the years has increased tremendously. And we saw that in 2018, as we had been seeing it sort of grow steadily in my 10 years or 11 years now in this practicing in this area. You know, I think another thing that we saw in 2018 was an increase in individual enforcement actions in the anti-corruption space. So charges against individuals for FCPA violations or other associated violations like money laundering for government officials, as well as international charges for individuals overseas for anti-bribery violations.
Yeah, and I both those trends I think are certainly notable. I mean, given the number of, for example, multilateral settlements that we've seen, I think certainly it's sending the message for people that, look, you just can't only worry about the U.S. side of things anymore. There's a lot of countries that are going to be after you. Now, apropos of that, some believe that there's been a slowdown from the U.S. side. Are you seeing that? And if so, is there increased non-U.S. activity to balance that out?
You know, I think there is often an ebb and flow in sort of the output, I would call it, by the Department of Justice in the FCPA space. So over time, some years may look slower than other years as far as corporate resolutions are concerned. But I don't think that there is has been a slowdown in activity at the FCPA unit. In talking to my, former colleagues at the FCPA unit, as well as sort of other people in the FCPA bar, the activity has stayed steady in that space. But perhaps the resolutions that the market has seen in 2018 may look a little bit slower. But the government is still moving steadily on investigations that they started in 2018 and then investigations that have been going on for several years. For sort of those of you who, are kind of active in investigations in this area, you understand that in the given the international and cross-border aspects to these investigations, they take a long time. So they can take years from the start of an investigation to a corporate resolution. So what you see in any given year as the number of resolutions by the department isn't necessarily indicative of the amount of investigations they're working on. I do think, though, that the number of individual prosecutions that the department has been engaged in the last year, that tends to slow down corporate investigations. There's only a certain number of prosecutors who work FCPA cases, and when those prosecutors are spending a lot of time, in trial with an individual prosecution, that pulls them away from being able to sort of further corporate investigations. So I think that is another kind of variable in all of this.
Very complex. Now, is the DOJ policy of not piling on something that is fairly recent affecting the number of prosecutions and overall size of settlements?
I don't think that it is a new policy that was issued by the department to encourage or to tell Department of Justice prosecutors that they should not they should figure out kind of what is the appropriate penalty for a particular type of conduct, and then not add on other types of civil settlements and things like that on top of that number, or add on to what another country may be fining or have already fined a company. But in my experience at the department, in the FCPA unit in particular, that was already the practice of the unit, was to, instead of saying, okay, this is, you know, a resolution where the company is going to be fined in three countries, the appropriate penalty for their conduct is $100 million. So we'll fine them $100 million. Brazil will fine them $100 million. And then Sweden, for example, will fine them $100 million. That wasn't what the department did then. And it's not what the department has been instructed to do under the non-piling on policy. Instead, the department tries to work with other regulators, be they domestic regulators or international enforcement authorities, to come up with a way to say, okay, $100 million is the appropriate fine for this conduct, and how should we, the different regulators, split up that fine so that the company is only paying the appropriate fine and not three times or four times the fine. So I think the piling on policy, while it is a new policy, I don't think it has really changed the behavior in particular of the FCPA unit.
Now, let's talk about another sort of newish policy, which is the pilot program, which encouraged companies to come forward, disclose on their own, and potentially get a reduction in penalties for doing that. Are you seeing an impact of that, both in terms of companies coming forward, and also are companies getting the benefits they expected to receive from their disclosures?
The pilot program has now been codified, and so it is no longer a pilot program. It is now what's been termed as the corporate enforcement policy. So it's no longer just sort of a test, I'd say. I think that the department, given that it is a new policy, has been trying to use that policy and demonstrate to the market that there are benefits to self-reporting and voluntarily disclosing, cooperating, and remediating. So there have been, I think, over the last year, a couple of examples of cases where, you know, in the past there might have been a non-prosecution agreement, and there was instead a declination under the enforcement policy. So I think companies are seeing some benefits from the policy. I don't know, and sort of in looking at the types of cases, they're not the very large violations. It's not like an Odebrecht case where you're seeing a declination or have seen a declination under the corporate enforcement policy. It remains to be seen whether that will be done in the future. But there are sort of outs, I'd say, for the government in that policy that say they don't have to, you know, there's only a presumption of a declination, but there are reasons that would overcome that presumption, one of which is the seriousness of the offense. So I think that, you know, time will tell how much the government looks to this policy as a way to really reward companies for their cooperation, remediation, and voluntary disclosure. But it is something where, you know, in recent times, the government has been trying to demonstrate to the market that they mean what they are saying with regard to the importance of these things. So there has been some examples of benefits to companies.
Okay. Now, when you deal with international investigation, you can't go too far without tripping over GDPR and its restrictions. And there's many that are concerned that it is or will make internal investigations much more difficult because of all the privacy requirements. What should companies be doing to ensure that they get the facts that they need, but in so doing, don't run afoul of GDPR?
Yeah, GDPR definitely does. The people who are thinking that it complicates internal investigations are absolutely correct. It does complicate these cross-border, multi-jurisdictional investigations. And I'd say the number one thing companies need to do is to be aware, really, that it is a restriction, and try to understand where their data is that they need to review in connection with an internal investigation, what limitations there are under GDPR or any blocking statutes, other blocking statutes that may exist, and really come to an understanding of kind of what those restrictions are. Are there ways where, let's say, there's restricted data in a given country, is it also resident in the United States, where, you know, the company can find a way to not have to face the restrictions of GDPR? So really, the number one thing is to be aware that it's out there, that it is a limitation, that, you know, it's still at this point largely untested, but the fines that could be levied are significant. So, you know, companies need to be aware of that and need to pay attention as they're doing an investigation to limitations that may apply. And if those limitations do apply, to try to find ways around them. Those ways, like I said, may be finding the data in a country where it's not limited, like the United States, or traveling to the country where the data is present to review it. There are ways to work within the GDPR, but it definitely does complicate cross-border investigations,
which, as we all know, are complex enough already. So, well, Laura, thank you so much for sharing this insight with us. I want to thank all of you who took the time to listen today. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA saying, I hope we were able to expand your compliance perspective.